Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting. I'm your host, Lex Friedman. Really, I'm everybody's host, not just yours. Today, our guests are Marty Michael, Jake Hurwitz, and Amir Blumenfeld, co-founders of the podcast network HeadGum. Hi, guys.
Hey there. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Did I say everybody's name right?
You did.
Oh, Nailed it. Nailing it. A lot of Jews today. We're going to learn more about HeadGum in a minute. But first, let's talk about shows we're jealous of. I want you guys to know, and this is true, before I even knew that we were booking HeadGum as a guest for this show, I know you guys are regular Wolf Den listeners, so you already know what I'm going to say, but I do this segment every week, and I was like, this week I'm jealous of All Fantasy Everything. So I just want you to know that that happened organically a couple weeks ago, and I was proud of it.
Cool. Let Ian know.
I'm jealous of that show, too, even though it's on our network.
This week I'm not pandering. This week I'm going with the Dax Shepard show, Armchair Expert, I think is what it's called. I'm mostly jealous of it because when Dax said, hey, I'm going to do a podcast, I was like, hey, Dax, can we sell ads for you? And he was like, I'm not going to do ads. And then a week later, he started doing ads with somebody else. Whatever, Dax, whatever.
Wow.
Whatever. I'm over it. It's fine.
Wow.
I thought the people with three-letter names with an X at the end have to stick together, but he didn't feel that way. It's fine. But do you three, and you should say who you are before you start so people start to recognize which voice is which, but let's say Marty. Marty, do you have a show you're jealous of?
Yeah, this is Marty. My voice is probably the least recognizable of the three of us, but mine is also kind of reciprocal to what you were talking about. It's My Favorite Murder, and that was one that when it was leaving Feral, we were also talking to them a little bit. But then they wound up landing with you guys.
So, yeah, they did.
The feeling is mutual.
You son of a bitch. You sniped our show.
You
daxed us.
I did. I daxed you. Jake, do you have a show you're jealous of?
So many. I have so many shows I'm jealous of. The one I'm the most jealous of is Two Dope Queens, though.
Mm. How about why?
When we started HeadGum, I remember thinking of all of our friends and who would have great shows. And I thought that Jess Williams would have a great podcast, but I didn't have the huevos to email her and ask her to start one. And then a few years later, there she is having the coolest podcast there is.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I get why you're jealous, but you can also just be happy for her too, right? Like I'm trying to change the story a little bit for you, right? Like it worked out.
You should be happy for Dax.
Yeah. No, you're right. That my line was bullshit. Amir, do you have a show you're jealous of?
I just want to add that Jake's also jealous because our podcast, the tagline has been Two Dope Queens since the first day. And they basically stole it and made it the title of their show. Anyway. The show that I'm most jealous of is The Starters, because they're basketball podcasters, and that's sort of my secret goal in life, is just talk about basketball and get paid for it. But since they're already doing it better than I could, I feel weird starting a basketball podcast now.
You've been on that show, though, right?
Yeah, I've been on the show, and I'm buddies with those guys, but I really just want to host the show and be a permanent
fixture.
Maybe
if something were to happen to Skeets, they would let you become a starter.
Ooh, I'd have to.
A slip.
I'm the number one reserve, I would think.
I co-host a tech podcast, but because of my work schedule, it's called The Rebound. I often miss it. And so there's a guy, James Thompson, who fills in for me a lot. And now people, when I show up on the show, are like, oh, it's nice that Lex guested on this episode of The Rebound. And it's just sassing me because I'm supposed to be a regular. Whatever. Good story.
Nice.
So our guests again are Marty Michael, Jake Hurwitz, Amir Blumenfeld. They are the co-founders of HeadGum. You guys started at College Humor. And when you were starting at College Humor, I was a cracked. So we were like mortal enemies who didn't know each other. How did you get to College Humor? Tell us the origin story that you've told thousands of times, but never to the Wolf Den audience. How did you get to College Humor? How did that start?
Let's start with Amir because he was the longest running employee of the three of us at College Humor.
I started writing for College Humor when I was in college back in 2002, I want to say. And then when I graduated in 2005, they got advanced to write a textbook. So they used that money to hire me and Streeter. And that was in 2005. That's how I got started with College Humor.
And I started also writing for College Humor in college, but my freshman year was 2004. So Amir and Streeter, I think, were already full-time employees then writing articles for the site. And I read the articles. I was a fan. And I said, hey, maybe I can do this too. I wrote from school for a year. And then I moved to New York and became one of College Humor's first interns.
Wow.
And I had been there for 4 years. So I guess that if we started this in 2015, it was 2011 to 2015. And my background is ad sales. So when I was at College Humor, I was selling a lot of branded content. A lot of it involved Jake and Amir. And that's how we became really good friends, because we wound up going on tour together.
They were like, thanks for all the money, Marty. Let's be friends.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. And absolutely. And then one thing led to another, and here we are.
Very cool. Now, the big question, of course, the drama. Why and when did you decide to leave?
College Humor?
Yes, to leave home today. No, to leave, College Humor.
I thought you were breaking news right now.
Yes. Why are you guys abandoning HeadGum today? Why did you decide to leave College Humor? And was HeadGum always the plan, or what was the thought process there?
When Jake and I left College Humor, I don't know if HeadGum was in the cards yet.
No. Well, I mean, we had been working on our podcast for a year or two. I think that gave us a little bit of a safety net to leave College Humor, because we knew we wouldn't be going out into the workforce and becoming broke. But I think we had been at College Humor for 10 years. We made 800 Jake and Amir videos, and we felt like that was probably 300 too much, and it was time.
And so then let's tell the HeadGum start then. How did you, if that wasn't always the plan, what made you decide to do HeadGum? How did you decide this is what we're going to do now?
I think we were part of a network that we didn't love, so that sort of inspired us to start one that we did. We thought, hey, if you know, we were to start our own network, what would we do differently? And that got us talking to Marty, because he was, you know, already selling us at College Humor, like, could you possibly start selling our podcast? Yes. Can you possibly start selling our friends' shows? What if we convinced some of our friends to start shows and group them together? What would that look like? And then, you know, started talking and dreaming big, and then settled on a name. And then once we had that, we just hit the ground running.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because my understanding is you came up with like 1,000 possibilities for the name. What were some of the rejected names for what became HeadGum?
Wow. We have an email thread probably with close to 1,000. Do you remember some of the rejected ones?
The only one that I remember... No, wait. No, I don't.
Trustfall, Treehouse.
Yeah, those were the two that were the big ones that weren't available URLs. So we did like 1,000 names. I think 3 were available. And I always say this, and then people are like, and then HeadGum was the one that we landed on, but everyone always asks, what were the other two that were available? And I don't remember.
And when I hear HeadGum, I think about you chew gum as a thing that's both enjoyable and a distraction. And you're saying this is that kind of content for your whole brain, not just your mouth. Am I putting way too much interpretation on there?
Wait. Say that again. I'm writing it down.
No, that's what I thought. I always thought it was it's like minty fresh breath for your brain. And then, or also like bubble gum for your brain, which is fun and enjoyable. Right. But I hadn't thought about the distracting angle.
A mindless nice activity.
Too. Yeah.
For entertainment.
Much like the wolf then. How important is the capitalized G in HeadGum?
Wow.
Oh, man.
That actually
we can't do that
huge,
on this podcast.
That was a huge
not today,
source
not
of
like
strife.
That was, yeah, that was a debate.
Actually, I think I was advocating the capital G because of my background at College Humor, which was two words, capital C, capital H, but grouped together like one word. So I was of the camp that we should capitalize the G. Which one of you was against capitalizing the G?
Me.
Yeah.
But Marty was, yeah.
But I'm fine with it either way. Or at least I'll say that on this.
Wow. Okay.
I don't want
to cause a breakup. Like, I don't actually want HeadGum to end today. So don't don't fight.
Yeah, HeadGum or HeadGum? Because if without a capital G, it might as well be HeadGum. I mean, look at it.
You're yelling at me.
Now, we have a crack research team, and they did a lot of digging for us. And one of the things they found was, at one point at least, you described HeadGum as in one way making money by a proprietary mechanism for selling ads across podcasts, which at the time you called Gumball. But we only found one mention of that online. Do you still use that term? Is that a real thing, Gumball?
That's a good question. I like that name, so maybe we will. Yeah, I don't know.
Where did you find that?
I will ask Harry. He will be in contact with you. For $10, he'll tell you where he found it.
Inside info.
Make it 20.
Okay, sold. This is how ad sales happens, people. But so really, though, tell us, what is the business model? How does the network make money? What do you do?
Sure. That's a Marty question.
Yeah. I mean, this is where I came in to play when we were first having our conversations around how HeadGum was going to start. My background is ad sales, so that's really where my core strengths are in. We decided that having their show as a flagship show and starting other shows around it was a good way to kind of take advantage of the advertisers that we're already working with, If I Were You, and expand them into other shows so that we could basically expand the amount of money we were making. Our main way that we drive revenue here at HeadGum today is through ad sales. Yep. We've grown from, in 2015, in August is when we started. We had 10 shows and roughly 500,000 listens a month. We're now 35 shows and a little over 7 million listens a month.
Wow.
So we've been able to gain traction. I'm pretty excited about the direction we're going, and that same growth has also been reflected in ad revenue. So for now, that is the main way that we make money.
And the ads that you're selling, are they traditional host-read podcast ads?
They are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
100%
yeah.
So to date.
And have you found, you know, Midroll has seen a steady march of brands where it was, you know, initially 4 or 5 years ago, before you guys started, I guess, it was all direct response folks giving out offer codes and vanity URLs. And then they're all still there, but there was a steady influx of brands. Are you seeing a same kind of evolution in the ad buyers who are coming to you?
Yeah, I think we probably owe you guys a lot of credit for that. I think that there are probably some that have come to us through relationships I had previous through College Humor.
Sure.
And doing brand advertising there. But Midroll has certainly done an amazing job of getting the word out about podcast advertising, especially to the bigger brands.
So blazing a lot of the trail for the Coca-Colas of the world.
Hey, we do exactly. Okay. There was a time early on when I would tell like first-time advertisers who were going on to an Earwolf show, like, hey, just so you know, as soon as this episode drops, you're going to hear from like the other four people in the world who sell podcast ads.
Right.
Because that's how everybody was doing it. I get it. Now, we were talking in the beginning about not just shows we're jealous of, but shows we're jealous of because the other guys got it. Talk to me about the Doughboys. How did you land the Doughboys?
The Doughboys became available when the network they were on closed up shop.
Yes.
And then we had buddies of ours who were buddies of theirs. So we were able to talk to them about the joys of joining HeadGum. And they felt creatively aligned with the brand we were creating over here.
Now, I'm curious, and I promise you, I am not attempting to Earwolf plug throw shade. The Doughboys is a popular show around here, and I'm guessing it's one of your bigger shows, and the folks here who listen to it say that it never has ads. Why is that? Is that a choice, or is that just a transition thing, or what?
It's a good question. I think, we just got them, so it takes a little time to ramp up and get tested with certain ads. Once they prove themselves, I think we'll see a larger influx of that happen, but that's just kind of how it works across most of our shows. I think for whatever reason, wherever they were being sold before, maybe they were being oversold for some reason and people are a little hesitant at first, but I know that we can get them tested. We have a bunch of stuff in the pipeline for them, so once that happens, don't worry, you'll start hearing a lot more ads.
Doughboys fans, good news. What makes a show a HeadGum show? How do you decide when you're vetting potential shows that already exist or might get created? How do you decide what makes a show a HeadGum show?
Ooh, good question. There's no like one specific answer. It's just this, funny is ideal. Informative is also a plus, a little younger skewing. So like a very dry political show with an older host probably is not a great fit as much as, let's say, an all fantasy everything type show, which is, younger, cooler, funnier hosts.
Yeah, I think that the niche that we've been trying to carve out for ourselves is definitely an independent voice and one that reaches a slightly younger millennial audience. So focusing really on the 18 to 25, but while we still have shows that reach that 18 to 32 demo.
And is it a core factor to decide, like, is this a sellable show? Like, will this show resonate with advertisers and do well for them?
Yes, but that's also 100% a blind guess until you acquire anyone. So
very true.
Well, the answer is certainly yes. It's impossible to know.
Now, much like us, you're a bi-coastal network, right? You've got studios in both New York and LA?
Correct.
How do you handle having a bi-coastal business? How do you kind of function as a company spread out like that?
Well, email helps. Skype.
You know,
a lot of video chat.
Have you heard of Slack? Talk to the people that are in our LA office using like our actual voices. We just Slack everybody all the time. So the only difference really is that like sometimes we wake up to like a really active Slack conversation happening on the East Coast.
You know, one of the things that we did when we started this company is we had a friend in New York who was very interested in what we were doing, and we brought him on as a general manager for the East Coast. So we have someone there. The studio is in an old apartment of his. He's been a huge part of what we've done since the beginning. His name is Nick Rad, and he's been responsible for producing most of the shows that we have on the East Coast. So he's been a huge help for us as far as organizing bi-coastal.
Very cool. I got more questions, but we have to pay the bills here at the Wolf Den too. So we're going to be right back after this break. If you love music and you love comedy, you love Weird Al Yankovic. Or you're me. That's just science. And if you've ever seen Weird Al Yankovic play live, you know he puts on an incredible show. Al just wrapped up his ridiculously self-indulgent, ill-advised vanity tour, where for the first time he played just his original songs. Classics like Dare to Be Stupid, Jackson Park Express, One of Those Days, Buy Me a Condo, and plenty more. What's more, every single night Al performed a different cover song too, paying tribute to artists like The Beatles, Tom Petty, and even Smash Mouth. There were 77 performances on this tour. Each one had a different set list every single night, and you can only hear them on Stitcher Premium. Every single show is unique, professionally mixed and mastered, and includes Al's impromptu banter as well. Listen to Weird Al Yankovic's ridiculously self-indulgent, ill-advised vanity tour right now with a free trial of Stitcher Premium. Go to stitcherpremium.com/weirdal and use promo code WOLFDEN to start rocking out with the Prince of Parody, the Sultan of Satire, the King of Comedy Music. That's stitcherpremium.com/weirdal. We're back with Marty, Jake, and Amir from HeadGum, and we were just talking about how you got the bi-coastal studio set up and how that's been working well for you. Kind of taking one step, I guess a half step back. That's a dance move that I've invented. Why do this? That is, what is it that excites you about podcasting? Because you guys, especially Jake and Amir, you know, you've got faces that are very well known. You've got personalities and comedic sensibilities that are very well known. What made you decide podcasting is where we want to, you know, cast our lot right now?
I guess for me, podcasting felt like on the up and coming end of the spectrum rather than like the oversaturated, like YouTube videos, for example.
Yes.
I remember when Jake and I were starting to make videos, YouTube felt very fresh and exciting, and that's what podcast feels like now.
Yeah, I think it's like it's a cool way too, like, because we had made videos for like 10 years, but we played such exaggerated versions of ourselves that we would meet fans and they'd be like, oh, is Amir really crazy? Does he really only eat chicken nuggets? And now for the last like 5 years, we've been doing this podcast where we're like pretty real. And it's definitely made like fan engagements and live shows a lot more fun because it feels like people know us. Like, we just went on tour in Europe and everybody was just talking to me, like congratulating me about getting engaged. It's just nice that it feels like you made friends.
I like that. And I mean, honestly, that's the thing that has been part of, you know, my own sales pitch to advertisers for years, right? Like, when Marc Maron first started his podcast, he was a struggling comedian like so many others. And as his show got more and more successful, he literally started traveling to shows with an empty duffel bag because all the fans who would go to see him as the show got more and more popular felt like they knew him and felt like their old friend Marc Maron was coming to town. So they would come with, like, they would go to the record store that day and give him a stack of vinyl or bake him cookies or whatever, it was just have gifts for him that he would take home because they're like, oh, it's my friend Marc coming. And I don't That's think there's really any cool. other medium that does that. You guys can steal the story, make it about yourselves. It's fine. there's also a HeadGum mobile app. What's the idea there? How's it going?
Oh, that was a project that we started probably when we first started the company, but left it. I'm not sure why it's still up. I don't know if you can even still get it. It was supposed to be taken down. That was a miss.
A failed experiment.
God, hey, listen, we got plenty of those. Now you mentioned YouTube. You have a YouTube channel for HeadGum where you have behind the scenes kind of sketches. You obviously have a history in that space. Is that an area you're hoping to continue exploring?
Yeah, that's another remnant of our college humor past where we like expressing ourselves through making funny videos. And that's a great way to like increase fan engagement and to differentiate ourselves from like a perhaps another podcast network who I won't name right now, but it shows, you know, that there's faces behind the names that you see, and adding video to the just general audio component that podcasts are known for.
Yeah, expanding on an audience that already exists is important to us. So we wanted to make sure that we continue that part of the brand as much as we can.
I get it. Let me ask you this. This is like philosophical. So I'm bringing the room down for a moment. How do you feel podcasting has contributed to comedy overall? And what does HeadGum add to that? Like, how good is podcasting for comedy? And what's HeadGum's kind of vision for that?
Please, Amir.
Oh, wow. Well, podcasting, one, it allows comedians who don't necessarily have an audience to gain an audience that they rightfully deserve. It allows comedians to, I guess, refine their voice, which is an opportunity that didn't exist before podcasting. Imagine 20 years ago coming up with an idea like All Fantasy Everything and then turning it into a live show, maybe a monthly show at UCB, and then growing it slowly over there.
Pitching it as a TV show and having spending 5 years in development before you get to make the pilot and then having it get passed on.
Right. And now with podcasting, you know, you need a couple buddies, a couple microphones, you put it online, and suddenly you got millions of people listening. What a huge opportunity that is. HeadGum is hopefully helping find comedians that would necessarily have a voice in another medium and give them the opportunity to find their audience.
And I think there's the part of it for me, Marty, is that we're trying to provide a platform in which can generate revenue for these comedians too. So while they're in between working on maybe some sort of quote unquote higher art form, they have the ability to sustain. And that is where we come into play with helping them monetize their show.
I like it. Gentlemen, this is an exciting time of the show. Because I'm not recording in the official Earwolf studio today, I can't do this the right way. They're going to edit this in post and put in the true theme song. But I'm going to try to play the theme song for you just so you can hear it. Because it's not a Wolf Den mailbag if you haven't heard the Wolf Den mailbag theme, which I'm going to try to mic for you now poorly.
Let's try.
Here it is.
Wolf Den mailbag. Don't be happy, don't be sad. Now just sit back and enjoy this week's Wolf Den mailbag.
What I think I love about that theme song the most is we go with don't be happy, don't be sad, which I don't know what they do want you to be at that point. And then we couple that with not, it's not actually a rhyme. Sad and bag and mailbag don't quite rhyme, but we still went with like have no emotional state whatsoever. And it doesn't quite rhyme. I like that.
Yeah, it's like 0 out of 2 ain't bad.
So the Wolf Den mailbag, though, is where listeners can send us questions, and then the guests and I try to answer them. And if you have a question for the Wolf Den mailbag, you can email us wolfden@midroll.com, or you can tweet at me, LEXFRI. I mean, we can all agree I have good questions. Wolf Den listeners have even better questions. This week's question is from Terry Crews. Not that one. It's from Terry Crews. I recently saw that Amy Schumer got $1 million to make a podcast with Spotify. Isn't that a lot of money? Are podcasters really making that much, or is this unusual? Jake, Amir, Marty, is $1 million too much for a podcast? Are podcasters really making that much money?
Yeah, every podcaster I know is making at least $1 million.
Well, we only, oh, I guess it's early in the year.
But we've made like $4 million this year.
Right.
So that's four? And Amy Schumer is probably more popular than we are.
Maybe.
Yeah. We're being sarcastic.
That's insane.
I'm more of a Chuck Schumer guy.
What's Dax pulling in?
Nothing for me.
That is a lot of money for a podcaster, but we're talking about it. So Spotify, if you got the money to spend, why not give it to somebody with a huge name like Amy Schumer? Yeah, That'll only help other podcasters.
They got deep pockets and they want people to know that they play podcasts on Spotify. So it's more of like, it's like an advertising.
Right. It's a marketing spend. I get that. This is my take, Terry, if that is your real name. I guess it's not a shocking amount of money to me. There are multiple seven-figure deals in podcasting. And it's a question of, for Spotify, to your guys' point, one of the things, your guys is one of my favorite constructions. they want to get more podcast audience, right? They're known for music. People don't know that they should go to Spotify to listen to podcasts. And frankly, a lot of people are going to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or, you know, whatever the app Google has that week for listening to podcasts. And the $1 million for a show that they think they can get a wide audience for makes total sense. The tricky thing is, there's no way in my mind that Spotify alone gets the audience for Amy Schumer on the Spotify platform that that show needs to merit the million. So there's, I would imagine that the show isn't just on Spotify. They're going to have to have it there in some way, windowed, and then publish it for free elsewhere.
You think she's going to read a Blue Apron ad?
To me, honestly, she feels a little bit more like a HelloFresh woman.
let's call this the race to second place, right? This money is 100% going to developing the platform and not for advertising.
That's right. They want to build out. They want to be a destination for podcasts. They want to be known for it. I don't think the money is crazy. Do I think Amy will voice the ads? My guess is no. However, if her co-hosts voice the ads, a path I have seen again and again is a host saying, I'm not going to do it, and then seeing their co-hosts have so much fun doing it, like when the hosts really make the ads their own, that they then want to join in anyway. So my guess is that she won't start doing the ads, but will eventually do the ads. That's my $1 million prediction. So I get that
ads
$1 million
fun.
If that turns out right. Yes.
I want to do a show that's just ads.
we have Stitcher Premium, which I find some way to plug every episode, even outside of the ads. And when we first announced Stitcher Premium, at the time it was Howl, we were like, hey, we're going to have original shows and this and that, and also ad-free archives of all your favorite Earwolf shows. And Hollywood Handbook fans were like, no, we don't want the show to be ad-free. We love the ads on Hollywood Handbook. Can we please have a version where we can pay for the paywall but still hear the ads in Hollywood Handbook? That's a good sign. I don't think that happens in any other medium.
It was awesome.
It was Sean and Hayes who said it, the hosts, but still, that's not true. But so you guys haven't yet offered anybody $1 million? Did you bid on Amy Schumer?
We offered Amy $133 and free pad thai. And I guess we never heard back, but I guess she took the Spotify offer.
Yeah, she discounted parking too, though.
Oh, that's true. We would have paid for half of her valet.
The thing is, free pad thai always makes me nervous. I would rather pay a little bit for my pad thai.
Yeah, like $3.99.
Exactly. A lot of podcasters and aspiring podcasters and frankly comedians listen to The Wolf Den, millions of them. So we like to ask our guests to share some advice. You guys started HeadGum, you started a company yourselves, you brought in Marty early on. What do you know now that you wish when you were first launching HeadGum that you had known? Besides the fact that you should agree on the capitalization of the G like way earlier.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we learned a lot. Do you guys have a good answer to that?
I think I would say one of the pieces of advice I would give is patience. I think that, it's been 3 years that we've been doing this. It feels like a lot more sometimes, and then it feels like a lot less other times. We've done a really good job of making sure we curate our brand, but patience is key in that process. So that would be probably my biggest piece of advice.
Patience.
Yeah.
Patience, yeah. Don't rush to any conclusions.
Take your time. I like it. And then I guess, is there anything else? I'm going to give you plugs in just a second, but is there anything else that you want to make sure that the Wolf Den audience knows about HeadGum? Is there a particular show that you think maybe people don't know about that you want to plug now?
Ooh, Punch Up the Jam is a very good show that probably deserves a bigger audience. They create a new song every week based on an existing song that they think could be better. I'm always surprised.
What an incredible concept.
Yeah, it's such a crazy amount of work.
Is the original song that they're going to work from, is it a popular song typically, like one that you would know?
Yeah, it's like Mambo Number 5, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Amir did your song, the Elton John song, right?
Yeah, and you can tell everybody that this is your song.
Yeah. I was going to recommend that same show. It's a great show.
Nice.
My go-to recommendation is always All Fantasy Everything. I grew up with Ian. Ian is fantastically funny. The way that those hosts work together is magical, and it is just such a fantastic show.
It is really good. And for listeners who don't listen to every episode of The Wolf Den, you suck, but All Fantasy Everything, they draft a fantasy team in any category. The hors d'oeuvres episode was really special to me recently. But it's a really good show. Check out.
Alternate careers was one of my favorites. Just hearing what these guys would rather do if they weren't comedians. That was really, really fun.
I think the most recent episode as we're recording, or maybe the second most recent, was very specific rapper names. Like they were drafting rappers that had Lil or something else in their name.
Baby. Little or Baby.
Lil or Baby. Young. And I very like... Young, yeah. When the title of the episode alone makes me laugh, I know it's going to be a good one because I like that. I don't know. I'm just putting that out there. So where should our listeners follow you online? I mean, they already know they're going to go to headgum.com. And yeah. I'm guessing it's .com, right? Yeah, it's headgum.com. Okay. But where else should they go to follow the three of you? Where can they stalk you on the internet?
Oh, gosh. Twitter, Instagram, maybe? Facebook? We're all over the place.
Yeah, all of the above.
Do you want to use names or do you want them to just Google it? I'm fine either way.
Yeah, I don't see anybody writing these down. Where can you find me on the internet?
Twitter?
Yeah. Just Google me and follow all my social media.
Yeah, you really should.
If you Google Jake Hurwitz, I really would appreciate you running down the whole list.
That's right.
Smash that like button.
You know, we Earwolf did a podcast with Seth Godin years ago, and then we did another show with him much more recently. And I love that, like, Seth Godin's business cards are like, Google Seth and I'm the first result. Like, that's the move. I want to get to that.
Wow. That's cool.
I'm not even the only Lex Friedman on the internet.
That's tough.
The other one's a woman. But seriously, to all three of you, Jake, Amir, and Marty, thank you for this. Congratulations on all your success with HeadGum. I want to also thank Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell. The Wolf Den mailbag theme is by Casey Holford. The lyrics are by Harry Nelson. It was Harry whom I was mocking. I would never mock Casey. You can subscribe to The Wolf Den at earwolf.com, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to rate us whatever your favorite app is. And if you've got questions, wolfden@midworld.com. Thanks, Jake, Amir, and Marty. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Guys, how easy was that? Come on. Like, that was easy.
That was butter. And then we get paid for it?
Wow.
Harry, we'll take care of that.
Awesome. We'll send you our invoice.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.